Blog Talk Radio.
Contract, which apparently nowadays doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but I think it was one of his last shows that really took him out, because he pretty much blasted. He talked a lot about the vaccine damage. The guy never holds back.
Right, and
and I think he just pushed it just a little bit too far.
Well, and with the January 6th, he released the footage.
That's a big one, right, because we know we know what happened January 6th.
Right.
And Facebook and Twitter, they censored absolutely everything about that day. And if it wasn't the truth, they wouldn't have had to censor that. Literally watching the guards push in the
Shooing people in.
Right.
And then within hours, that footage was taken down. You couldn't find it anymore.
Right.
So, but I remember seeing that with the guards, it was almost like it was a fire drill. They were waving people on, go in.
Right. Well, the thing is it's hard to know what to believe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is. I mean, a perfect example is Elon Musk was caught meeting with Chuck Schumer today.
Yeah, right.
On Capitol Hill. Now, what's that all about?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
in fact, our guest, guest might be able to tell us a little bit about that. He's
right.
Already holding, so we're not going to do too long of an update. But
well, and then Don Lemon got fired from CNN.
Yeah.
And I guess he had it coming. He said something a couple months ago, and they suspended him for a week or something like that, and then he apologized, and they thought it was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I always laugh about Don Lemon because I'm old enough to remember Jack Lemon. A movie actor, comedian, he was one of my favorites way back when.
Yeah. So a little bit on New York, they still have not passed the budget. Supposedly, they're close to resolving the major issues with the 2024 state budget.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, and then I heard on the news that I guess Erie County, the county that we live in, overtaxed us by $98 million last year.
Aww.
So, I'm getting real sick of this. They tax us because they can.
Right.
Not because they need the money, because they can. And they're building up these big, you know, they used to call them emergency funds. Mm-hmm. Well, here in Western New York, come on, we don't have hurricanes, tornadoes. We have little earthquakes, but, you know, nothing that's going to wipe out buildings and stuff. Forest fires, we don't have any of those kind of emergencies.
Not yet, anyway. They keep geoengineering the weather. We might, who knows. But, yeah.
Where they have, millions and millions. Even my little town has probably $8 or $9 million worth of emergency funds in different funds, which means if they didn't collect a penny in taxes for a whole year, they've got enough money to cover their expenses. Mm. Why do they need that much money?
Right. And think about it. I mean, during COVID, the polling cards, who's the Erie County executive on the other side of the state, opposite of New York City, they had a crap load of money left over. They were buying shrimp and pizzas and chicken wings. I mean, that's what they were doing with money that really belonged to the people. And now look at, now they've raised the tax ceiling, and I'm sure Diane's going to want to talk about that too. They raised the debt ceiling again yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Not here, but in Washington.
Right, right.
I mean, how much further can it go besides infinity?
Yeah. Or until they collapse the dollar, whatever comes first.
Which is starting to happen. I mean,
yeah.
China's even pulled out. The major city in China's pulled out. I mean, that is happening. You know, they want this new world order, and they are going to do anything to achieve this.
Yeah, there's five or six countries that, no longer are they basing their currency on U.S. dollars because, I used to say everybody bought dollars because we were the least worst currency.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I mention my girlfriend Catherine every week, and I bet you she's listening. Maybe not. But every week, and she is never wrong. She's never been wrong in, 10, 15 years. And she says by the end of the year, we will be digital currency. So scary stuff, because when you go into the stores now, I mean, even like Whole Foods, they give you the option to pay with your palm. This stuff is going on. In China, you can't get into anything without facial recognition. You haven't had your jab. Guess what? You don't shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and that's not what we want here, but people are so blatantly stupid that they just follow what their government tells them, and, they believe them. I mean, they told them at 11:59, the time when they discontinued the mask, that if you... the next day it's going to be discontinued. But 11:59, you still have to wear it because COVID is there. But it wouldn't be there at midnight.
At 12
o'clock. I mean, the thinking is just so misconstrued, I can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people still wearing these diapers around on their face.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. Stop. I see people driving by themselves in their car wearing a mask.
Still, I cannot. So on to speaking of New York State budget. So George Borrello, who is one of the senators for New York State, fantastic guy. Unfortunately, again, he's in the minority like the rest of them. But they are thinking about raising the Easy Pass rates another 5%. So I guess there was a meeting about that in June. So another 5%, even though when I was younger, it was like a dime, right, to go across the state. Maybe 15 cents, dollar at the most,
uh-huh.
Right, at certain exit. Now, I mean...
Yeah, it's like 20 bucks to go from Buffalo to Albany.
Yeah, so not only do our tax dollars pay for the thruway, but you have to pay additional to ride on it.
Right, and there's a little clause that the Grand Island bridges can only go up by a quarter at a time.
Yeah.
That's how they went from 50 cents to a dollar in a two-year period, because there were two small raises on the thruway.
Yeah.
And so that took it to 75 cents for a little while and then to a dollar. So now with this other 5% raise, that means it'll be a 25% raise on the Grand Island bridges. So that'll go to $1.25.
Right.
With, 2.5 million tourists a year that go across those bridges.
Mm-hmm. And then they want to bring in the wind turbines and anything else. So switching gears, we don't want to make Diane hold too long, but just to do some updates, because I did get an email from somebody yesterday, and they said how much they love the updates at the beginning of the show. They're super busy. They work three jobs, and they said at the beginning of the show, we love the updates because it gives me, a point, to reference. So Disney is suing Ron DeSantis in the state of Florida after he decided that he was going to not let them be their own little city anymore, and he wanted them to start paying taxes, which we all know Disney is corrupt as all corruptness. So now Disney is thinking about actually moving out of Florida. I mean, they have 80,000 employees. That's a lot of revenue.
Right.
But that's also a lot of taxes.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, they should pay taxes. The Floridians are all paying their taxes. Why should Disney be exempt from that?
Right.
So they got, and then, you know, they got all ticked off at him because he said that you cannot use, I don't want you using the word gay. You know, and Disney is full of gays, full of transgenders, and it's everywhere. But, you know, so they got mad at this, so now they're suing him. I mean, so that should be interesting, suing the state of Florida. I mean, they just burned their bridge,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Yep.
They just burned their bridge. So what else you got?
Let's see what else is in here. It looks like nothing's going on in the Trump trial.
Yeah.
Of course.
I know that got so quiet, didn't it?
Right.
Yeah. And now JFK running for president, and of course,
or
Biden. Biden.
Yeah.
Oh, JFK, yeah. But yeah, you know what I mean. Somewhere in the family. Somewhere in that family. But and now Biden, of course, you know, announcing his whatever.
His candidacy, yeah.
It's like, please help us.
Yeah, he's going to run again.
So it's like, who's going to be in there, or who's going to be planted in there, I guess is the better question, because we all know, and we're going to have the citizens audit again in June.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all pretty much know that there's election fraud. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And, you know, in those videos, were, unless it's all a setup, it's hard to say. But I don't know. You know, I feel like we get played a lot.
Well, what was it? Fox got, 783 million dollars that they've got to give to Dominion Systems because they accused them of tampering with the election.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dominion, Dival. Dominion, they've got subsidiaries in all these different countries. So, you know, all these states, you know, like Diebold in Western New York, you know, we don't use Dominion, we use Diebold machines. Well, guess what? Diebold is owned by Dominion. So when the county executive could say, hey, we do not use Dominion machines, yeah, he's right. He's not lying. They're not using Dominion machines. They're using machines that are made by Dominion from one of their subsidiaries.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, even with, you know, back to New York for a second, they're saying that 1 in 3 are planning on leaving the state. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they've already lost, you know, they've already lost a lot. And to Florida. I mean, a lot of them want to go to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You know,
I think Florida's going to sink. That's why their Fort Lauderdale Airport was underwater.
Yeah.
There's so many people moving there that you can't handle the weight.
I don't know about that. Well, that's, okay, Dean. Okay. Well, I think we should bring Diane on. And Diane has been, you know, she's been on our show a couple of times, Diane Sayre. And
yeah.
She's just a wealth of information. She ran against Chuck Schumer last election.
Yep.
And, you know, why he's still in there, I have no idea.
Well, because, you know, New York City, we're a 2-to-1 state, you know, so.
He's just nuts. But, you know, she gets out on the street corners telling
mm-hmm.
people the truth about what's going on, and she's going to fill us in on her latest candidacy for against Christian Gildebrand. Wouldn't it be great to get rid of her?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Chucky's lapdog.
So we're going to take the first 10 minutes or so and let her update us on who she is and how she got to this point, and then we're going to get into some nitty-gritty of what's going on.
After the break.
Diane, are you there?
Yes, and thanks. It's great to be back with you again.
Our ratings when you are on are so high. I think people really enjoy, you know, the toss up a little bit away from New York. Not that we're not focusing on New York, but they want to know what's going on worldwide, and you are a wealth of information of that. So I am so glad and honored to have you on again. So for the listeners that haven't tuned in to one of our previous shows, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to the point that you're at?
Sure. Sure. So I am, well, the first thing to know is I worked with Lyndon LaRouche for 33 years before he passed away. He was, I think he still is actually, the most controversial political figure in the United States, was an economist, was in management consulting, and then ran for president 8 times. And he was the author of the strategic, what Reagan called the Strategic Defense Initiative. They met actually at a debate sponsored by the NRA in New Hampshire in 1980, and LaRouche was working with people who were working on laser technology, and he got Reagan's ear and said, I know you, like any sane president, not like this president who's insane, but is concerned a nuclear war is the end of everything. President Trump said that. He said, I'm not revealing any national secrets if I tell you if we have a nuclear war, there's nothing left. And LaRouche said, what if we could eliminate the threat of nuclear war by developing a higher technology, a defensive capability, i.e. laser beams that could knock out the missiles in flight, prevent them from detonating, and thereby making them obsolete. And Reagan loved this idea. James Baker III did not. The Bush family did not. There's a huge amount of money to be made by keeping us perpetually on the brink of nuclear war and by keeping us in this lockstep that our enemies are big countries like Russia and China. That's a little bit of my background. I'm a musician by training. I went to Hamilton College for a year, then transferred to New England Conservatory. I play the trombone. I direct a chorus. And lately I have been not doing as many as my friend, but I think probably most of your viewers are familiar with my famous staffer, Jose Vega, who is the one who has been calling out AOC and most recently the New York Times and Reuters on their lies, particularly their lies on Nord Stream, their censorship, and he got thrown on the ground this time by the security guards. He's fine, but I think people have had it. By the way, these videos are going viral in terms of the interventions. I think the American people have really had enough censorship and spoon-fed narratives. They may not all agree. They may not know what's true, but they definitely don't trust the mainstream press.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to now, and especially what, you know, what happened this week. And that just, it's got to raise, if you don't have some red flags raised by now, you're way too asleep still.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So on Gillibrand, you know, I think in some ways, if you could imagine it, she's more nefarious than Schumer, who is an evil, amoral bastard who has been involved in just certain personal perverse pleasures and payoffs and things like that. She is very much involved in the cryptocurrency stuff. Her father-in-law was briefly an executive director of British Aerospace, and the LaRouche organization did some work years ago on British Aerospace and a deal that they had with the Saudis arranged by Margaret Thatcher, so this would be in the late 80s, to ship a tanker of petroleum a day from Saudi Arabia to the UK in return for unlimited weapons from British Aerospace for the Saudis. And some of my colleagues did a calculation, how much money would this add up to on the spot market? And between late 80s and 2001 would be about $80 billion. And given certain of the connections and money of British Aerospace, some people have a strong hypothesis that that may have been part of the funding for what became the 9/11 attacks. So I'm not saying she ran it or knew it, but she married into that. So then she is a prime sponsor of this Restrict Act, which I would urge everyone to read. It's S-686. It's only 55 pages, and it's got a lot of legalese. Actually, the longest part of it is how nations that are put on our so-called enemies list can get off of the enemies list, which is an enormous rigmarole. But it's supposedly about protecting technology and protecting information. But if you read it, you see that one of the things they consider criminal is saying that our elections are not fair and that individuals who are associated with basically challenging narratives or companies can face up to 20 years in prison, $250,000 fine. And the last paragraph of the act says that the Freedom of Information Act does not apply. So if you're tried and convicted under this act, which Gillibrand is sponsoring, you are not allowed to have access to what you have been accused of. I mean, this is something which is in our Declaration of Independence. One of the reasons why we declared independence from the British Empire is this kind of fake justice, injustice, where we don't have equal justice. Everyone is not equal under the law, and the law is arbitrary. It's at the whim of whoever seems to have the most money and power at the moment. That's what she represents. Now, colleagues of mine think this Restrict Act is dead in the water, that it's not going anywhere. But what is the mindset of someone who would introduce such a thing? And then when you put that together with what you brought up, what just happened with Tucker Carlson, and what I think is really insulting, which is the idea that Biden is declaring his intent to run again. I mean, that is such an insult to the American population. Like, they think we're a bunch of morons, that you cannot see that the guy can't even walk on and off the stage, let alone say anything that makes sense. It's pretty outrageous. And Diana, one of the things you said in the updates, I think is really right. They're resorting to this kind of censorship and trying to impose things by force, not because they are strong, but because they are weak. They are vulnerable. Their system is disintegrating. Everything they do backfires. Russia's not being destroyed by the sanctions. We are. China's not being destroyed by the sanctions. We are. And the rest of the world is getting off the Titanic. They're saying we keep our money in the New York Federal Reserve, and it's called the New York Reserve, Federal Reserve, because you reserve the right to steal our money. We don't want to hold dollars anymore. We can't trust you. You have banks collapsing all over the place. We're going to move to other currencies, maybe a diversified basket of currencies that are actually tied to physical production, tied to real trade. We're not going to sign green deals and shut down all our fossil fuels. We want to get out of poverty. I mean, it's a completely different movement going on in the rest of the planet, which it would be the natural impulse of the United States, if we were living up to the tradition of John Quincy Adams and Abraham Lincoln, we would be leading this. Instead, we're trying to crush it and threaten nuclear war.
Yeah.
Yep. I always wondered why, you know, we as a nation come under the strictest, environmental, worldly environmental restraints, whatever, and China can pollute as much as they want. Well, that's because they're classified, believe it or not, as a third world country, and we're classified as a first world country, and the first world countries can't pollute, and the third world countries can do whatever they want. It's nuts. And something you mentioned that ticked my memory was, I always wondered why, for years and years, we're giving billions of dollars a day in petrodollars to people that hate us. You know, under Trump, we became energy independent. We were a net exporter of crude oil, not importer. And, you know, you mentioned 9/11 and those people. We absolutely did give them the money, one way or another, to do what they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and look, qui bono, you have to also look at for an inside element? I mean, how was it that we had, like, virtually no security that day? That just doesn't make sense. And then what was the agenda that they rammed through our throats? Well, if you don't submit to nudie searches and total, you know, surveillance and massive data collection, then we're vulnerable to terrorism. Well, no. And you can see that these series of wars we launched based on lies and disinformation didn't really make us or the world much safer. In fact, they made things much worse, like the assassination of Gaddafi, which Hillary Clinton giggled about. I don't know if you saw, I think you can find it online. He actually wrote a letter about a year earlier warning that if he were assassinated, if his government were toppled, he said, my nation is the last bulwark. If my government is overthrown, I'm toppled, you will see a flood of refugees hitting Europe. You will see Islamic extremists. He warned about everything that happened, which, you know, our people and British intelligence, I have to say the British, because we really have sort of been taken over by them, orchestrated.
Yeah. So, Diane, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, we cut out there for a second. Completely. I was like, what happened?
Yeah.
See, they must be censoring us. Open. This is an uncensored platform, so you could say whatever you want. We are going to head to
our first commercial.
You just have to hang tight on the line, and
okay.
We're going to come back with questions, and that's what we're going to do. All right, so D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond. We will be back in 4 minutes, guys. Hang tight.
It's going to take a hell of a lot of work to make up for all the damage he's done internationally and nationally. His network of thugs and co-conspirators are going to continue to try to undermine our democracy in the meantime. Imagine what he can do in another year. Imagine what can happen in Ukraine.
Dino DiCario knows the restaurant market. He's been in business with two locations in Westmoreland County for more than 3 decades.
I've been in business 32 years, and it's never been this difficult to find people.
The signs tell the story right now. Staffing at DiCario's Greensburg location so short, he's closing the restaurant on Mondays just to give his team a break.
You can't take advantage of people. They're working, some of them guys working, girls working 6-7 days. It's not fair to them.
Like so many business owners right now, DiCario says he's tried to boost interest, keeping wages well above minimum wage, offering unlimited overtime to anyone that wants it, along with a list of other benefits.
If you look up and down the highway, everybody's offering Burger King $1,500 bonus. I mean, that says it all.
According to the National Federation of Independent Business, nearly 60% of small businesses were trying to hire people in April. 44% of those weren't able to fill open positions. And that's just small businesses. DiCario says he thinks expanded unemployment benefits are keeping people home.
Everybody needed help. Everybody wasn't working. But I think we've gone too far. We need to get people back to work. I think there's the unemployment compensation, and I know people may be mad at me for saying that, but we need help. I mean, you know, people got to come back to work.
A special focus on 5 ways to make gains in getting those of you who are unvaccinated, vaccinated. Because here's the deal. We are continuing to wind down the mass vaccination sites that did so much in the spring to rapidly vaccinate those eager to get their first shot and their second shot, for that matter, if they needed a second. Now we need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
You know, we are at an inflection point, I believe, in the world economy. Not just the world economy, in the world. It occurs every 3 or 4 generations. As one of the top military people said to me in a secure meeting the other day, 60 million people died between 1900 and 1946. And since then, we established a liberal world order, and that hadn't happened in a long while. A lot of people dying, but nowhere near the chaos. And now is a time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. We've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it.
commercials are not to promote Biden in any way. They're so that people can hear some of the ridiculous things that he has said. So we just want to make that disclaimer there. By the way, you can check all of our podcasts out on iHeartRadio, Apple, Freedomizer Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and, of course, we always post them on our Facebook page. Diane, why don't you mention your website real quick before we continue?
Sure. It's chairforsenate.com, and my last name is four letters, S like Susan, A-R-E, chair for, word spelled out, F-O-R, chairforsenate.com.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. So you're running next year against Kirsten Gillibrand, who, you know, in a lot of ways reminds me of Kathy Hochul, of Queen Kathy. You know, Queen Kathy was a moderate town supervisor. She was a moderate Democrat county clerk. Then she got to Albany and all of a sudden turned far right. Well, when Hillary dropped out of the Senate to run for president, Cuomo, I believe it was, appointed Kirsten Gillibrand to fill that slot, and Kirsten was a moderate Democrat congresswoman from upstate, and all of a sudden, she too becomes a far leftist. So how do you plan, you know, where has Kirsten left herself wide open, and how do you plan on beating her?
Well, I think we're in a very interesting situation right now. And I don't know if you followed this demonstration in D.C. called Rage Against the War Machine. Do you know what I'm referring to?
No.
What happened was, and I have to say, because of the blowout of the system, and I hope we can talk about that a little bit now, another bank, First Republic, seems to be failing. But we also really are on the brink of nuclear war, and it's not because of Putin. It is because of, and I don't think Russia, unless we really push them to an existential threat where, you know, Biden seems to want to do that. But we are so delusional. We have people who are so arrogant and so delusional. We really are risking crossing that line into something which is completely irreversible and is the end of the human species. So what occurred is that the chairman of the Libertarian Party, a young woman named Angela McArdle, newly elected, and the chairman of what's called the People's Party, which is, his name is Nick Brana, and the People's Party is comprised largely of people who are with Bernie Sanders. Nick Brana, who is the chair of it, was Bernie Sanders' outreach director, and he became so disgusted with the way Bernie Sanders sold out his supporters, because Bernie pledged to never take big money, this and that, and then he just folded, Hillary Clinton stole the vote, and then they found out he was indeed taking big money and so on. So Nick created the People's Party, and Nick and Angela basically said, look, we have many substantial disagreements, libertarian being more free trade, decentralized, et cetera, People's Party being more, you know, leftist leaning. And they said, but if we have a nuclear war, none of these disagreements are going to matter. So we're going to come together. We're going to hold a rally in Washington, D.C. This was actually the largest anti-war rally since 2003 when the Iraq war began. And it was people across the whole political spectrum. I was honored to be one of the speakers there, along with Tulsi Gabbard, Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, Jimmy Dore, Kim Iverson. I think your listeners may know a lot of these people. And it was tremendous. And what was really exciting is the mainstream media went absolutely bonkers and tried to pick everybody off one by one and spread all kinds of gossip to turn people against each other and get them to not show up. And you knew what a success it was when Rachel Madcow, I call her, did this three-minute thing after the rally occurred. There were maybe 3,500 people who turned out, and this was at the Lincoln Memorial on President's Day weekend. And I know after January 6th, there's been such a chill put on people coming out to demonstrations because they're still rounding people up. You know, the FBI is still knocking on people's doors 2 years after. But so 3,500 people showed up, and it was, I thought, just incredibly moving. And the atmosphere at the rally was very elevated because people went there saying, you know what, I'm going to be here with people with whom I disagree. But we agree we cannot have a nuclear war, and therefore I'm just not going to react. So you had people with Ukrainian flags and dressed up like clowns trying to provoke. Nobody was ruffled. Nobody flinched. Many of the people who were there, like Jimmy Dore, Kim Iverson, have, you know, combined millions of followers on Rumble and YouTube and this and that. And so what happened was everyone started getting on everyone else's platform because the mainstream media was so freaked out. The George Washington University newspaper, seemingly out of the blue, I can imagine if you were a student at GWU, you'd wonder why are they running this. 2 days before the rally ran a two-page hit piece about LaRouche called, and on me personally, calling it the walking dead, like a death threat. And Rachel Maddow said afterwards, well, I don't know what all these people were doing together. You had the Proud Boys there and Russian flags and the communists. And I mean, it was just a pro-Russia rally. Well, it wasn't a pro-Russia rally. It was an anti-nuclear war rally of people saying we're tired of this game where the mainstream pits us all against each other, and when we have burning issues like hyperinflation, massive bank bailouts, Nazis, you know, this called for freeing Julian Assange, stopping not one more nickel to Ukraine. I mean, it was just, I think this is a new dimension in American politics, and I think it's not going away. And I think this is one of the things that they feared so greatly about Tucker Carlson, because he actually just acted like a journalist. He wasn't afraid to have guests on his show with whom he had disagreements, but he thought that people had the right to hear and make their own decisions. And lo and behold, maybe we should trust the American people a little bit, that if they're provided with certain background and documentation and left to their own devices, they might actually figure things out. And of course, I think that is exactly what they fear. So it sort of vindicated my view that the best course of action is to run as an independent candidate. Not that, I mean, the Democratic Party, forget it, it's a hopeless case, but the Republican Party is not going to stand up against certain financial interests and so on. So I think it would be sort of a pipe dream to think that I would be endorsed by the Republican Party unless they really, really wanted to defeat Gillibrand and work with someone as kind of an independent. But you see this new coalition coming together where people also are saying, look, these two mainstream parties have so much power. Maybe we should work together in more ways. Like maybe we should pick a few races around the country that we're not going to challenge each other. We're not going to split the vote among a bunch of little parties, but we're going to agree that these are important races where we want to oust some of the incumbents and we're going to unite our forces. So I think this is very interesting, very promising, and I'm sure we'll come under attack a lot more.
Yeah, you were talking about the demonstration against nuclear war. You know, I remember growing up in the Cold War era, there was always, the ultimate, I think they called it the ultimate sanity of mankind, where in the end the American and the Russian may have their fingers on the button, but, you know, the mutually assured destruction, you know, we have enough nukes to kill the world, what, 10,000 times over, and so do the Russians. But now we've got this new little wrinkle with the Chinese. And do they feel the same way? Do they have, you know, the same sanity? In a sense, we're not a whole lot different than the Russians. You know, they may not have an official religion, but, you know, they used to, where the Chinese have a totally different view of life than we do, or the Russians. Or
well,
the
I
Europeans.
Actually have to tell you, I think the Chinese place a much greater value on human life than we do now in the West. I mean, if you think about the way they revere the elderly when we just throw people on the scrap heap, and they, I don't know if you're aware, but it's been several years since they had their one-child policy. They abolished that. They're shifting. It doesn't – we're coming from two totally different points. In other words, they are crawling out of the Cultural Revolution under Mao, very consciously – rejecting a lot of what he did. We are coming from a different point of you know, a certain amount of freedom, individual freedom, and so on, with now we're going sort of in the opposite direction with everybody cracking down and trying to run a dictatorship. But they also, you know, it wasn't so long ago that I think it was the five members of the UN Security Council, which is the U.S., Russia, China, France, and the UK, reiterated, as Reagan often said, we have to agree that nuclear war can never be won and must never be fought. Well, the Russians and Chinese just reiterated that, but the Biden would not agree to that. And the U.S. is the only one of those three nations that explicitly does not rule out first use. So we reserve to ourselves the right to quote-unquote preemptive nuclear war, that we can launch a nuclear strike even if we are not attacked by a nuclear weapon or with an existential threat. We can arbitrarily declare something is worthy of a nuclear response, and that's what's so very dangerous. And as you may be aware, you know, speaking of nuclear and moving in that direction, the British have delivered depleted uranium to Ukraine. So Ukraine now has depleted uranium shells and missiles, because that's useful in penetrating tanks. The Russians don't use that. They use tungsten, which is very, very dense. It's not radioactive. The U.S. used a lot of depleted uranium in Iraq. And I believe the incidence of cancer per 100,000 people went from something like 16 per 100,000 to 400 per 100,000. It was this massive, massive, like 400-fold or 1,600. Maybe it was 40 cases to 1,600 cases. Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was a 400-fold increase in cancer as a result of using depleted uranium weapons. And that is what the British have now shipped to Ukraine. So think about that. That's why I'm saying what is so scary about this is the unbelievable arrogance of the West, where we say we can make up the rules, we can do whatever you want, whatever we want. But if you do it, then we will have to escalate, take measures, et cetera.
Yeah, and I feel like people, I don't know if I want to say they turn the other cheek, but I feel like they think that it can't happen to us, you know.
Correct.
Just given the lifestyle here and given, we're spoiled as a country, you know, and I think the whole COVID thing has showed us, you know, A, we're really not, and B, I don't feel like people are well-versed enough in the potential that could really happen.
And you know, Diane, I think I've got to disagree with you, because, you know, the reason that the U.S. didn't agree with this is because Biden forgot to answer.
Right. That could be. Well, Biden may not have known where he was, but.
We have somebody, he was now, an ice cream cone, don't you know?
Or no, he was catching himself from falling down the stairs.
Yeah, or up the stairs. So we have somebody that's waiting on hold, and they have their hand up, so I'm assuming they want to ask a question. Are you okay with taking one?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, area code 217, are you there? You're live with D&D.
Yes, ma'am. How are you guys doing?
Good,
how are
you?
Good, how are you?
Hey. I think that the idea when it comes to China and Russia, I mean, historically, like in the last 100 years, I don't think it's fair to compare them to the Western world because they allowed tens of millions of their own people to die. And I think that's very sad. I don't think we should compare ourselves to them on that metric. Obviously sending that kind of ammunition over to the Ukraine that is obviously radioactive. Yes, that's obviously terrible. But, man, stepping foot in another person's country and the tens of thousands and invading a country, I mean, what would you do?
Well, we've already done that. We invaded Iraq. In fact, the United States is occupying a larger part of Syria than Russia is occupying Ukraine. But the world is not bombing us, sanctioning us, telling us to... In other words, there's a horrific double standard going on. And further, it's not really that simple because the Ukraine situation, it goes back farther, but you have to at least go back to 2014 when the Obama administration overthrew with $5 billion from the National Endowment for Democracy, which was formerly the CIA, George Soros, others, overthrew the Ukrainian government in something that, frankly, was a little bit reminiscent of what we saw on January 6th. We had people on both sides, totally violent, Molotov cocktails, the police being set on fire, and parliamentarians being beat up with baseball bats, and Obama called this a great peace movement. And then you have the phone call from our very own Victoria Nuland saying who was going to be the government. So
is that really how you remember 2014 in Ukraine?
That's not how I remember it. That is how it was. And that's documented very well.
The country, the police were the people shooting. I understand that there were dissidents on the ground, but that's no different than
there were actually snipers in the hotels who were shooting people on both sides to create the maximum chaos. And what happened was that we installed a regime that revived the legacy of Stepan Bandera, who is now a national hero, revered, who was the collaborator of Adolf Hitler and killed hundreds of thousands of Jews, Russians, Poles. So we revived total fascism and Nazism in Ukraine. And then the people in the Donbass, who were largely Russian, wanted to secede. They declared themselves autonomous and they asked to join the Russian Federation. And Putin said no. He said, don't join, work it out. And they worked on the Minsk Accords, and now, which is also public record, Angela Merkel and Francois Hollande of France just said, oh, no, we didn't really mean the Minsk Accords. We weren't trying to get peace. We weren't trying to stop those Russian people from being shelled by Ukraine for 8 years, killing 14,000 people. We weren't trying to stop that. We were just trying to buy more time so that we could have a war with Russia, so we could arm Ukraine and have a war with Russia. And if I were Ukrainian, I would, what?
I'm sorry, ma'am. I was just going to ask, do you think that the Germans regret that very much now, that their cost
regret
of
what?
Everything, because energy is gone up because they're entirely dependent on Russia?
Well, energy's gone up because the United States blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, Joe Biden, Seymour Hersh, has not been wrong, and there's another article out now detailing more of how this whole operation was put together. And you know, Biden, there's the recording February 7th, I think, of right before the special military operation of Russia, where Biden says Nord Stream will just be stopped. And the German journalist said, well, how is that going to happen? And he said, it'll happen.
It'll happen, believe me. Yes, ma'am.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. But we were dealing pretty well with the Keystone XL pipeline that would have actually made the crude oil coming from Canada and Alaska readily available. That would have been a lot cheaper for Americans.
Well, since when did Biden care about Americans?
Yes, ma'am. That's what I'm saying, though, is that that was actually on the up and that was actually working. We were working on that. And then Nord Stream 2, that stuff was on hold. And then he put Keystone XL on hold, and he brought Nord Stream 2 up, and he might have blown up lines. I'm not going to, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and rub my nose on that one. But yeah,
I wouldn't look for rationality in anything Biden does, and it's hard to know who controls him all the time, although my own hypothesis is he's definitely suffering from dementia, and when he's not suffering from dementia, he is a mean-spirited character who is vicious and criminal.
Yeah, we are in a complete agreement on that, absolutely. That's fair.
Okay, well, I'm glad. But on this Ukraine situation, it's really important to look at the history and look at what we have said about carving up Russia and overthrowing Putin. And, you know, it's all hanging out there. It's not secret information.
Yes, ma'am, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, that's okay. We just wanted to thank you for calling in. Could you tell us where you're calling from?
Yes, ma'am. I'm calling from Illinois.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for tuning in and for your dialogue with Diane.
Other caller with their hand up, 716-668.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Diane, can you take a question from another caller?
Sure. Yes, gladly.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. How are you? Thanks for calling in.
Okay, you're welcome. And Diane, it's a pleasure to listen to you. I've seen you on Facebook numerous times, and I do respect what you're trying to do. But I do have a question and something that I listened to recently. Are you aware of the WHO vote that's coming up at the end of May where the U.S. is going to turn over our sovereignty over to the World Health Organization?
Yes, I've heard something about that, and I don't support that. And I don't see very much evidence that the World Health Organization is terribly concerned about health.
Well, they're not, and I think that's my issue with this. I don't understand why there isn't more publicity on this, and why people in Congress are not more in touch with what's going on in the world. They're so concerned about their, you know, election and. You know, now, you know, they have a win and they sent the bill, you know, in the House of Representatives, and it's now in the Senate. I mean, it's all this stuff going on. And Biden's staff, in the meantime, is working on this amendment for the president to sign, and no one's saying anything.
Right.
So
there's a lot of that. And I think, really, we should audit the Congress. I mean, where are people getting their money from? We should find out who is funding them, who is funding their campaigns, what stock do they hold? A lot of people got awfully rich going into COVID before various of the whatever laws came down. And I think looking at the money flows would tell us a great deal. So I don't know that it's people aren't aware as much as it is that people get beholden to certain financial interests rather than the interests of the people that they are supposed to be representing.
You know, I heard a statement today, and they were talking about the swamp, right? And
yes.
They were saying that the swamp is not as much the elected officials, because we can get them out of office, but it's all the people that control the people that are in the Senate and the people
right.
that are in the House. And they're the ones that really control everything that's going on right now with, you know, with the distractions that we're having all over the United States. And a lot of that is, I mean, people are more interested in the NFL draft tonight than they are in everything else that's going on. It just amazes
right.
me that they just don't care, or they just don't want to know, or maybe they
well,
just think everything's going to go away and it's going to be better tomorrow.
Let me just, one thing you said, unfortunately, I have to say is actually not true, which is that it's not so easy to get these people out of office. Now, you're correct when you say that there are other interests behind our elected officials. I just learned from Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, that there's something called the interagency group, and that apparently at some point Biden had said he wanted to go back to no first use. He wanted to go back to a policy of, I forget what they call it, single use, or, which meant that nuclear weapons were only for deterrence, and that the interagency group told them we weren't ready to do that. And what Scott said is, did anyone ever see this group on the ballot? Did I never hear of this group? Who is this group? And how is it that they get to tell even the president of the United States what to do? You also get a sense of why Donald Trump was in so much hot water all the time, because clearly he was challenging this crap. But I experienced very directly in the election, and since you said we're not censored here, I watched my vote in when I ran against Schumer, and I wasn't expecting to win that race in particular, but they did have one poll which mentioned my name, which said I had about 5% of the vote, which is huge. That's about triple what an independent candidate would normally get. And in uh-huh. some counties, like my county, Rockland County, I had 5.8% of the vote on election night, 6,212 votes.
Mm-hmm.
That was at midnight on the election night. The next morning, my vote was down to 177 votes, 0.2%. And I went into the Board of Elections and discovered that somehow my vote of 6,212 had been switched over to something called blank votes, which is allegedly 6,000 people went to vote in the election but didn't cast a vote for U.S. Senate. And then I discovered that 30 other counties had done the exact same thing. Now, maybe you could say you had a drunk election worker or something, and they made a mistake, and oh, Miss Sarah, we're just so sorry, they accidentally made it look like you had 5.8% and 6,000 votes, but really that was the blank vote, excepting the exact same thing happened in 30 counties.
Right.
So the fraud is massive.
Yeah,
we're actually
they never want to address the term limits. It's a funny thing about that. You know, it's been brought up several times, but it's also been glossed over. It's like they bury it under the paperwork or whatever they're doing. They won't even talk about that. And some of these people have been in office too long. I mean, they're too comfortable.
Well, for some people, 1 week is too long. For some people, 24 hours in office is too long.
One day might be too long.
Yeah.
But it just amazes me. I think there's so many things when I was growing up and how things have changed for just overall, it's not the way it used to be. It never will be. And we have to accept the way things are to a certain point. But nobody wants to do anything to change it. And that bothers me more than anything. That everyone's so empathetic. It's like, oh, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You know, and I worry about it every day. I worry about it for, you know, my children. I worry about it for my grandchildren because they're not going to know what they were missing. I mean, what we had, they'll never have. And it's really sad between, you know, the school districts and the teacher unions and everything that's going on and how COVID brought all this stuff up. And, I mean, they're still working on the Wuhan lab thing. Okay, we all know what's going on there. We know that, you know, it was released by the laboratory. And so, you know, just everybody agree to that, and let's move on. Let's go on to something else. Let's go on to something more important. But
yeah, like how do we make sure that this doesn't happen again or isn't
again,
done with something much more deadly? And what was
right.
going on in Ukraine with all those bioweapons labs? How about that? Why don't we find out about I mean, these are questions we need to get answered.
Because Tucker Carlson's gone. So who are we going to ask? Who's going to ask all the questions? So I don't know. It's scary. And I'm sorry, I'm going to rattle on, but I'm going to let you go. But thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the show. You're a very knowledgeable woman, and I wish you the very best against the incumbent senator.
Thanks.
You're very welcome, and have a great evening.
All right, you too. And don't despair. You care, I care, we care. That's why we're here, and I think a lot more people care. They just don't let us out in public, so it's hard to measure how many of us there are.
and I feel like there's a lot more than there used to be. I mean, if I could switch back to 2019 for a minute and how the 26,000 families were affected by when they got rid of our religious exemption. I mean, so many of us felt alone, you know, because everybody thought
right.
we were nutbags. Oh, just vaccinate your kids, send them to school, when they don't know the whole story behind, you know, the reasons why we didn't do that. And I feel like there's a lot more reinforcements now.
Yes,
for
sure.
Yeah. So we're going to head to our second break, Diane. If you could just hang tight. Callers, thank you for your questions so far. And we will be back in 4 minutes. D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond. Hang tight, guys. We will be back.
And a little bit of chicken fry. Cold beer on a Friday night. Our parents seem to fit just right.
State of Texas, DSHS has informed public health departments that they have adopted a revised definition for COVID-19 probable cases.
So for confirmed case, it stays the same. You still just need PCR. But now they've added a probable case definition. So that still gets counted towards the case count. It's different. It's not confirmed. It's probable, but it's still a case. So at the end of this definition, there are 15 different options on how you could be classified as a probable case. Based on this diagram and what they report, there's a total of 17 cases now. One is still only confirmed because that was that original index case who then had all these contacts underneath in orange. And all the rest of them became probable, but they are still considered a case.
It has the potential to be a very significant event for us here in Texas and here in Collin County, as the state now has elected to adopt this new probable definition. If you have a subjective fever and you have a headache and you live in Collin County, you now meet the qualifications to be a probable COVID patient. It is remarkable how low the standard is now.
Mm-hmm.
If you have one of the major symptoms, you have a cough or you have shortness of breath and you live in Collin County, then you can satisfy the definition for a probable COVID case. but I'm very concerned that we absolutely could see the numbers jump very rapidly in a way that actually is not indicative of what we're seeing here in the community in the public health department.
The clips you just saw.
Read this article. It's in my news. I know it's BC News, but it's worth your time. It's in the newsletter, bongino.com/newsletter. Sign up for free. It's right there. The article is worth your time. It's called Inside a Biden White House Adrift. We're talking about the chaos in the Biden White House. I want you to listen. This, it's only about 3-4 sentences, but this is worth your time. Keep the deep state in your head here. Quote, beyond policy, Biden's unhappy about a pattern that's developed inside the West Wing. Biden will make a clear and succinct statement, only to have aides rush to explain that he actually meant something else. The so-called cleanup campaign, he's told advisors, Biden that is, undermines him and smothers the authenticity that fueled his rise. Worse, it feeds a Republican talking point that he's not fully in command. One, that's a Republican's pounce. You probably already caught that. But this isn't a Republican's pounce story. Well, it is, but it isn't. It's about the deep state. Folks, tell me again how the deep state's a conspiracy theory. He's the president of the United States. He's angry that he said something and says a bunch of things, whether it's the shift on Taiwan policy, the Russian invasion, whatever he says. Aides come out and immediately say something different, and Biden can't control it? I thought that was a conspiracy theory, fellas. I thought it was just a bunch of us nutbags. Kind of like what happened in the Trump administration when Trump would say something and a bunch of losers and zeros who think they run the government would go and leak something to the media. Remember that? And we were told it was all a conspiracy.
Yeah.
That's just patriotic Americans trying to stop Trump from destroying the country. Really? You ever notice how the media loves to tell you a story and not the story? Now that it affects Joe Biden, the deep state, all of a sudden NBC News acknowledges it with a wink and a nod.
All right, we're back.
We are back. So, Diana, you know, it's funny. You were talking about I've got an article that I saved that I read probably 15 years ago now. It's called The Fourth Branch of Government, which is the administration branch. You know, what's the administration branch? It's, you know, the Department of Commerce, Department of Labor. And, yeah, the heads change with every administration. But, you know, 99% of the people are the same, administration to administration. It really doesn't matter. And they're really the ones that are running our government. It's not the politicians. I believe that our government has gotten too big for 535 people to look over it. So you've just got layers upon layers upon layers of people doing the work for them.
That sort of sums it up, although I would, in this sense, to be provocative, I spent some time this year over Christmas and New Year rereading George Washington's farewell address, which I think a lot of was written by Alexander Hamilton. And he said that you had to have a powerful central government. Why? To protect people's freedom. Now think, and I started thinking about that, and I thought, in a sense, our actual elected government isn't powerful, is it? Because you have all these special interests and billionaires who have created all these monstrous bureaucracies that are not in our Constitution, that we didn't vote for. So ironically, you could actually say that Washington was right. Our government abdicated. We didn't use law. For example, we have laws against monopolies. We have laws against trusts. We didn't use those. We allowed all these things to become created. And in a sense, they've become more powerful than the government, and they run the government. And we think of them as the government, but actually they're not. They're not constitutional. Mm-hmm. And perhaps we, the people, bear the lion's share of the blame because we failed to act and we failed to demand that our Constitution be upheld. And that's why I think we have to become active, and everybody should be active and not just wait until the elections, but go to your congressman's meeting, go to the town hall meetings, do what Jose Vega and many of his younger friends are doing, go and tell the truth in public and record yourself and get it out on social media. We saw a lot of this. People were doing it at the school board meetings where they're teaching all these disgusting things to children. You know, we have to speak out. It's urgent now. And the more we speak out, the more we will discover that we're not small and we're not isolated, and we're in a very funny kind of moment where people who may really disagree on important matters find themselves on the same side on this one, like freedom of speech. That is so urgent, and we are losing it. And if people don't use their right to free speech, we will lose it. And in a sense, we should be happy when we can hear from people with whom we have disagreements, because we're supposed to have that in this country.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin said, you know, when he was talking about the three equal branches of government, the judicial, legislation, and executive branch, he said the fourth branch was the press, and the press was the watchdog of the people. I think those were his exact words. And I remember when I was a kid, you know, we used to make fun of Pravda. Pravda meant truth in Russian. Mm-hmm. And that was their newspaper, and you know, they were just 50 or 60 years ahead of us. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because our news media now has really become a voice of the government. And they're no longer independent. And I think that's what happened to Tucker Carlson. I read someplace that he may go to OAN, which is One American News, and they don't have that here in Western New York. I was introduced to it when I'd go down to Maryland and visit my parents, and Dad had it on all the time. His cardiologist told him not to watch it anymore. But anyway, you know, people would say, well, what's One American News? I'd say, well, you know, like Fox News, they'll have a discussion, they'll have like two Republicans and one Democrat, you know, to give the point of views, right? Well, OAN, they just have three Republicans. They have no Democrats. It's as far to the right as the mainstream media is to the left.
Well, I hope he uses his voice wherever he can. I think he will. We'll have to see. And as I said, and going back to what Diana said at the beginning, they are weak. They are weak. Look, this system is crashing. In 1999, the Clinton administration repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, which is the separation of the banks. So the savings and loans, there's a firewall. The savings and loan banks do small business loans, mortgages. You keep your savings there, and they are not allowed to be housed in the same building, nor have the same executive board, nor be in any way connected to investment banks where people can buy things with a risk and, you know, maybe make money, maybe lose money, but you know you're taking a risk. And what happened was that firewall was removed. We had virtually no bank failures for 66 years, from 1933 when Glass-Steagall was signed into law by FDR, introduced by Glass and Steagall, and at least one of them was a Republican, if not even both, I'm not even sure. But that remained in place till 1999. Now, forget it. These banks that are crashing, they're just the tip of the iceberg. And it's not a solution to throw the FDIC rules out the window and just go ahead and arbitrarily print more money as we did before. We know where that leads. We need a kind of bankruptcy reorganization where the banks are separated again, and the things that are real and really exist have to be protected, and the things that are based on gambling are not protected, except you're going to have to go through, for example, the pension funds. A lot of pension funds are in things that are very speculative, very shaky. So if you were to do a kind of a bankruptcy reorganization, you would, rather than bailing out some, you know, billionaire's bet on what the weather in Tahiti is going to be 6 years from now, you would say, well, let's bail out the pension funds because people depend on that. They worked for that. So we're going to protect the things that the lives of the citizenry depend on. We are not going to protect the things that are merely someone's fetish, gambling idea that they're already a multi-billionaire. If a few billionaires get cut down to just being multimillionaires, probably they'll be able to get by. I'm sure it's rough to only be a multimillionaire. I haven't experienced it, but I think they'll probably live. But if you shut down the local sewage treatment plant because you say they defaulted on their debt, that's going to kill people. Right. Mm-hmm. So we have to get control of this. And the City of London and Wall Street are holding two, at least, I'm sure it's more because there's so much offshore banking, $2 quadrillion of derivatives obligations. That is way beyond the GDP. It is simply unpayable, can't be honored. So just cut it out. Look at the things that our physical existence depends on: energy, food, clean water, infrastructure. Protect those things. And you know what? If we increase the ratio of production to the ratio of speculation, we will discover that the purchasing power of the dollar massively increases. That's the only way you get rid of inflation, is you increase production. Well, that's what we have to do. And it's very hard for people to imagine because we've been experiencing this inflation so long. But there was a day when one person working 40 hours a week at a basic middle class, even lower middle class job could support a family of four, five, or six, pay for their kids' college, cover health insurance, pay for a mortgage, and take a vacation.
Yeah.
And we should be back to that. Right, forget it. People have to work a zillion hours.
Yeah, that's almost impossible now to try to achieve that kind of lifestyle unless you've got, you know, $40,000 worth of credit card debt, which a lot of people do. Sadly.
Yeah,
right.
And Diane, exactly. I agree with you 100%. I think one of the problems with the family now is that today you need two incomes to live the same way that you did in the 60s with one income.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So in order to have a house, a couple of cars, groceries on the table, you need the second income because the middle class, you know, this inflation has destroyed the middle class. And in the meantime, it's destroying the families. Going back to Glass-Steagall, I've been saying for years, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, that gave us the crisis in 08 and the crisis that we're having now. The third part of it was the insurance companies. So now you've got banks, investment houses, and insurance companies that are all under the same roof. And when interest rates were zero, people weren't giving out loans. They were investing in the stock market. And now that the market has become stagnant and interest rates are up, all of a sudden they're giving out loans again. You know, so you know, banks, their purpose was to have people give them money and to give loans. That's the purpose of a bank. An investment house is where you make investments. An insurance company is where you have insurance. And for it to all be under one roof is really screwing the general public.
Yes. Now, let me tell you something that I just learned. And you and your listeners may be familiar with Whitney Webb. She wrote a whole book on Jeffrey Epstein. And she just wrote, she started a series of articles on the rise of Jamie Dimon. And this is really astounding. Apparently, it was Robert Rubin, who was Treasury Secretary under Clinton, who signed the order the first time for Jeffrey Epstein to go to the Clinton White House. And Epstein was also very close with Sandy Weill, Citigroup, which merged Travelers Insurance with Citibank, which is how we got to the repeal of Glass-Steagall. And Epstein visited the Clinton White House 17 times. So this tie between this hideous perversion and the financial world, and you know, if you do you remember the Enron tapes?
Yes.
When Enron was ripping all these people off, we're going to F granny up the A. This is like a satanic sex pervert mindset of someone who gets a high of ripping people off and watching them suffer, and you feel like you have power because you can do that to people. It's really sick. And I think a lot of these people should be in jail. Jamie Dimon should be in jail. A bunch of these other bankers, they have caused so much suffering. And you're right. It's not even suffering of individuals. It's the whole structure. The family is being destroyed. People can't move out. Who wants to start a family if you're living with your parents till you're 34? Right? It's very difficult. No, it's terrible. And then they're creating bizarre things. I read an article, and I don't know how widespread it is, but I'm afraid it might be more than you know, of some very peculiar place where this woman was living with several men, marrying one, but sleeping with all of them and having children, because they said that it was more economical, that really a couple couldn't afford to get by. So they had this, like, bizarre social formation. So I think these things are very much related, as you said.
It's a really tangled web.
Yep.
You know. And you could go down the rabbit hole for a century. And people still
right.
won't believe you.
No, but see, the good part is that it's over. It's done. Every bubble, there is no bubble in the universe that can expand forever. It's gone. It's collapsing. So we should force them to cry uncle and just say, and in fact, Glass-Steagall has been reintroduced in the Congress. There's a bill. It was introduced by Marcy Kaptur, a Democrat. Now, thanks to this crazy partisan nonsense, even though many Republicans we had spoken with before support it, they don't want to get on the bill. It's crazy. People should bombard their congressmen. The name of the bill is Return to Prudent Banking, and it's the original Glass-Steagall, basically. We should get that thing passed. It's really urgent. And I'll tell you, if we did that, that would go such a long way toward getting control of these illicit forces. For example, as you said, we've got all these different functions under one roof. So if you're going to break up the banks again, guess what? You're going to have to go through their books and find out what's going on. Well, what are you going to find? You're going to find drug money laundering and human trafficking, all kinds of horrific things which should have been sorted out are going to become visible, which is one of the reasons, by the way, the British, they actually said, I don't know if it was from the House of Lords or where it was from, but some high-level Brit several years back said that the U.S. reinstating Glass-Steagall, they would consider a casus belli, that it would be a cause of war if we reinstated this. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Diane, we're going to be getting ready to wrap up the show. So
yeah.
is there one or two points that you really want to leave our listeners with tonight?
One is we are very close to nuclear war, and don't forget it. And you should, and related to that too, you should make your voice heard. Go to every town hall meeting, whether it's your congressman or some other muckety muck, even city council, and say we should stop sending weapons to Ukraine. We have to end this. And number two, this Glass-Steagall question, because we don't have to live this way. We could turn on a dime, not that everything would be solved instantaneously, but the direction of our nation. We've done this in the past. It's not been this bad in the past, but we've done this in the past. Americans are famous for this. So we don't have to go down the road where our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren have worse, more miserable lives than we do. We can turn this around by getting Glass-Steagall and by investing in massively increasing the productivity of our nation and working with other nations who want to do that, which is most of the world. So those are the two thoughts. It's not hopeless, but we are in a heck of a dangerous situation, and unfortunately we have to face it. We can't run away from it.
Right, right. Okay, and why don't you tell us your website again?
Sure. SareForSenate.com, S-A-R-E-F-O-R, Senate.com.
Okay, perfect. So I'll be sure that once this is up, I'll be sure that I send you and your assistant, who's been wonderful to work with,
okay,
the link for it. And we appreciate you joining in again tonight.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I always like being with you.
Yeah, we'll keep following and sharing, and once the election gets closer, we'll definitely have you on again.
Great.
Okay. So to our listeners, you can listen to all of our podcasts. We post them on Facebook on the events. You can listen on iHeartRadio. I'm losing it here.
Blog Talk Radio,
Freedomizer, Apple. And for our upcoming shows, we're just going to give you a little skinny on some of them. Next week, we actually have open mic. So if you know any organization or anybody that is interested in being on the show, reach out to us on our Facebook page or on the website. And then the following week, we've got on Scope of Erie County, and the 18th, we've got on the Loud Majority of Long Island. This is a fantastic group. I love this group. I've been following them since day one. And then we've got, what else do we have coming up? Oh, we're going to have the Chickawaga Republican Committee and their town representatives on again.
And then June 8th is the Citizens Audit, New York State Citizens Audit.
Yep, and then we're looking for guests and people that want to be on the show. Somehow we always round them up, but if you're interested, reach out to us. We'd love to have you on. So D&D, Delivering the Truth in New York State and Beyond, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a good week. Things are going to get really sticky and really hairy, so keep your eyes open and be good to each other.
Okay, have a good weekend.